Hi, this is Dolores Cannon again. I think this show is going to be aired Thanksgiving weekend. And by that time, I will have just returned from Dubai in the Middle East. So today, if I sound a little scattered, it's because this is the day that I'm leaving when they're recording this. I'll be leaving in a few hours to the airport. And you know what that's like. You're trying to get all your things together, especially when you're going to be gone so far and going to be gone. I'll be gone for about 10 days, and I'll be back here Thanksgiving weekend. But, of course, it'd be quite a difference over there. It's going to be the desert. And they said even where I'm going to be doing the lecture is going to be in a big courtyard. It'll be out in the desert. And so it'll be interesting. When I get back, I can talk about it and tell everybody everything. All I know so far is that there is strict censorship because it is a Muslim country. And in order to get my books into that country, they have to go through our distributor we have over in Europe, had to send copies of some of the books to the censor board so that they could review the books and make sure that they were all right to bring into the country. And I was told there are some things I'm not going to be able to lecture about over there because, you know, I have 13 books in print, so all of them will not be there for the time that I'm there. And there are certain things, definitely the Jesus material is definitely taboo. I can't talk about any of that, even though my books are not really what you would consider religious. That's what they're worried about because, you know, later on I'll be talking about this as we go through all these different talks, but my books on Jesus are about the missing years and the parts that are not in the Bible and what he was really like, as I found with my work with regression. So it's not exactly the same thing, but I don't want to upset anybody over there, and I don't want to get anybody angry. I definitely don't want to be thrown out of the country. So it'll be probably a story to tell when I get back. But they said when I do the lectures, most of the people that are coming, I think, are what they call the expatriates. They are the ones from used to be a British colony, and some of the ones that are the British state over there. And they told me they are starving for information. And so that's mostly what I'll be talking to. And I think in the private lectures, I can be a little more open. But I just have to be careful. Like you said, they also are not too keen about UFOs and ETs. So that's another subject I probably won't be able to talk about over there. But maybe in the private groups if they want to ask questions or something. But otherwise, they assured me that it's perfectly safe. You know, after the bombing in Jordan, that's a little close. But they said this is a neutral country. Dubai is a neutral country. It's the United Arab Emirates, and that way it is neutral from that part of the world, and it's not taking any sides. So that could be different. But, you know, we never know when you go to that part of the world. But it'll be a first for me, and we'll see what happens. So by the time this airs, I will be back into the country, and the next week I will go live, and then we'll be able to have call-ins, and I can talk about a lot of different things that have happened. But it's really amazing when I think about this, and I travel all over the world, get to see so many different things, and to me it's become ordinary now, but when I think about it, I really am touching every continent in the world, and this is the first time to be on the African continent. So maybe that's a point to that. My information has to be everywhere. They told me that once I speak over there in Dubai, the people who are bringing in the books said it will open up the whole Middle Eastern market. So I don't know where I'm going to be by this time next year. My books are already being translated into Chinese. And as I said earlier, they're in Russian, so I'll be going back to there in March. Okay, but let's get back to some of the information that I was talking about, continuation from the last show. Because once I go into the live ones, then I want to focus on the subjects of the books and let people call in and ask questions. And with so many different topics, this could go on for quite a while. But last week, I was talking about some of the causes of problems and how they can be traced back to past lives. And one, I was talking about the cause of deep sadness, which a lot of people have. And I went through the ones where they had watched the destruction of their planet and the one that was supposed to be a twin. There wasn't time to go into one other one. That woman came to me, and she had extreme sadness, depression. There was a repeatable pattern in her life of abandonment, rejection. She called herself the throwaway child, the feeling of being unworthy, the fear of what? She didn't know what it was. But she was abandoned at birth and was raised in an orphanage. She went through some bad marriages, always having trouble with her jobs, is constantly being fired. It's like she said, a repeatable pattern of abandonment, rejection, and the throwaway, being unworthy. And she, when she came to me, she had thoughts of suicide. I get several people who tell me that they are really wanting to commit suicide, and they want me to, I'm like their last hope. Now, that puts a lot of responsibility on me, and I really don't like to be put in a position like that. But I certainly do as much as I can to try to help these people. But I had one woman that came to me that said she was so unhappy at her job that she was going to kill herself. She was wanting to commit suicide. She hated her job so much. I said, no job is worth that. You seem like there's always something you can do to get out of a situation like that. It's not as bad as some situations people find themselves in. But to her, apparently, it was bad enough that she wanted out. Well, the woman who came to me, though, that had this extreme sadness and the feeling of abandonment and rejection, she was entertaining the thoughts of suicide. She'd already tried it a few times. She just thought her life was no longer worth living. When we took her back, it was a very strange regression, and I really had to work at it to get it all straightened out. She went back to a lifetime where she found herself running down the streets of this city. It was way, way back in ancient times, but she was running down the streets of this city carrying her baby, and all the other people were running and screaming also, because there was a army of men on horseback were chasing everybody down the streets with swords and, you know, parts of the wars that have gone on down through time, eternal, everybody, it's always a man, but, you know, they're always having these wars. And so there was something happening in the city, and they were chasing the people, killing everyone they found. Everybody was running and screaming to get away from the men on horseback. So as she ran, she was trying to find a place where she would be safe among the chaos that was happening. So she thought the baby crying might attract attention. She put it down inside of a doorway, and then she ran across the street and was hiding inside a building. She thought, well, surely they wouldn't hurt a baby. Well, she was mistaken, because as the soldiers came down the streets on the horseback, they killed the baby. And she was so distraught that by the time they found her, raped her, and killed her, she didn't even care, because she was just so distraught about seeing her baby die. And she thought she had abandoned it. She had left it to be killed, and it was her fault that it died. And so even when she crossed over to the spirit side, and I was talking to her on that side, she was still distraught, thinking that what a horrible thing she had done by leaving the baby to be killed. This is part of why she brought this guilt into this life and was punishing herself all through this life by the same thing, the feeling of abandonment and the pattern she had set up for herself. Because found this, whenever you do try to program your life. You try to put in situations that will repay karma and things that you think need to be repaid. So she had made these plans on coming into the life about being adopted and abandoned at birth. But it was all following this pattern of how she felt by being abandoning her baby. And she was trying to punish herself all the way into this life. So when I had her on the spirit side of that life, I had to do a lot of talking to her, trying to make her see it wasn't her fault. Even if she had not left the baby in the doorway, they would have probably both been killed anyway if she had stayed with the baby, because that was the way it was in these times, that they would just killed everyone anyway. So I had to convince her, trying to, that by staying with the baby, it wouldn't have done any good. She would have still both been killed. So this is where the therapy comes in, is working with the subconscious to understand all of this. The subconscious was willing, but the person was not. She was so mired in this feeling of guilt. And the more I kept talking to her, I said, can you forgive the man who killed the baby and killed you? She said, oh, yeah, they were just doing their man thing. She could understand that. But it was different. I said, well, if you can forgive them, can you forgive yourself? She said, no, I can't. I can never forgive myself for abandoning the baby. So I really had my work cut out for me. And I worked with her for quite a while to relieve that feeling, to where she could finally forgive herself, understand it wouldn't have made any difference, and allow that situation to go. So she would stop carrying that feeling of guilt and punishment around with her and let release it. But that was one case. It did work, but it does take a lot of work on my part. But you can see how them these past lives can bring these feelings forward to where they, even on the conscious level, they don't understand what is happening. But once you realize it has nothing to do with this life, but it has everything to do with another life, then it begins to fall into place. But there are just so many, many of these cases that I've had. I don't know if I talked about this one, but it was a woman that came to me in London who had eczema. They call it eczema. I think we call it eczema, all over her body. The only place she didn't have it was on her face, because she had found some kind of a cream that she could put on her face so that it wouldn't be there. But she was a beautiful girl, and she was attending the College of Psychic Studies in London. I speak there several times, and I'll be speaking there again in March when I go over to London. It's where they have metaphysical courses. Just like a college, you can graduate with degrees. She was taking courses to really become involved with metaphysics and begin to practice these things. But she was having a lot of problems with it because, you know, it felt like there was something wrong, and she didn't know what it was, that she couldn't complete the classes. But she had had this eczema all over her body from the time she was a child, and it was just the burning and the itching and the feeling of awe constantly. And when she was a child, they put her in the hospital for a while to try to treat this. They tried cortisone, they tried all kinds of things, and nothing ever really worked. She tried Chinese medicines, herbal medicines, but she said they just made her stomach irritated, and so she couldn't take those. So it was a constant burning and itching all over her body. And she was very beautiful, and her face was the only part that she could keep presentable. So I had a inkling of what I was going to find when I went back into the past lives. Because when you talk about burning and itching, to me, it brings up the image of fire. And that was what it was. Because as she went into the session, all she could see was fire. And she found she was tied to a stake and she was looking into the fire at the bottom of the stake as it began to creep up the body. I've had many people die from burning at the stake, but as a rule, they don't stay in the body, because I said, who would want to be in the body as it was going through a horrible death? Mostly what I've found is whenever they're going into a death like that, any kind of a sudden violent death, that the spirit leaves the body and watches from the outside of the body, because it doesn't want to be in it when these things are happening. I've had them doing with plane crashes in the various wars and things like that. They will leave the body and watch it go down. I had another woman who died with burning at the stake, and she was very angry because she was unjustly accused without trial and was drug out to be burned. This happened time after time during history. Anyone involved in metaphysics, the occult, herbs, or anything like that were suspect of thinking of working with the devil. And they thought they got rid of all of us, but we're back. We've come back now in this time. But this other woman I was talking about, when she was watching the body, she said, I'm going to go out of the body, and I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of watching me as I die, watching me scream. But she was looking at all the people standing around in the crowd, and she was saying, I'm going to remember each and every one of you. So she was dying with anger, and she was creating karma by this feeling of looking at these people, say, I will remember each and every one of you. In that case, she said, I'm going to leave the body as they begin to burn it, and I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of hearing me scream. She found out that doesn't happen, because when she left the body, there the body was screaming in agony as the fire crept up. And she was very upset with herself. But I found the body and the spirit are two separate things. The body will react on its own. This is why it makes people feel a lot better to know that if someone has died in a violent death, they were not in that body whenever it occurred. They had left the body and was watching it. But the body reacts because it is a separate entity, a separate thing that has feelings and reactions of its own, even though the spirit is outside the body. One example of this is when you burn yourself. You know, you suddenly, if you burn yourself on a pan on the stove, suddenly you scream and pull your hand back. This is a spontaneous reaction. You don't have to think about it. The body is reacting on its own. Well, in the case of the woman with the eczema, she went into the life watching the fire as it crept up her body. And this is what created the eczema in this life. In that life, she had been a man who was involved with a group of Gnostics. The Gnostics are the people who have the great secret knowledge. And they were not bothering anyone. They lived in this big house, and they were involved with the accumulation of knowledge, the writing of books, and the hidden knowledge and hidden books that were not allowed. Well, they were captured and taken into a mock trial to where it didn't mean anything because they were going to kill them all anyway. Mostly they wanted to know where these group had hidden these ancient secret books. But anyway, as this man, she was tied to the stake with the rest of them, and they were burned. And this is what came forward, the memory of that into this life, causing the eczema, the burning sensations on the body. Also, it brought forth this fear of getting back into metaphysics with hidden and secret knowledge because of, look what can happen. Happened once, maybe it'll happen again. So I had to work with that woman. The same thing I said before, that this is from the past, it belongs in the past, and we leave it in the past. It was connected to the body she had at that time. And this was a whole new opportunity. We were living now in an age of enlightenment where she could study these things without the fear of recrimination. So by the time she left, she was really feeling as though a big load had been lifted off of her. It was a tremendous satisfaction for her. I'm trying to think of which ones to focus on. Like I said, I've done thousands and thousands of people. There are just so many, many cases that I can go into. There are more souls out there in line for the handicapped bodies than there are for the normal bodies. By this I mean when they're coming into a life. In my book, Between Death and Life, I go into what happens when you die, what it's like on the other side, and all the places you can go to over there, and how you make your plans to come back into this lifetime. Because usually you will meet with people that you have had connection with before, people that you have built up karma with. Because the main lesson is to get rid of all the old karma and not make any more. This is the only way you can advance in this life, is to get rid of the karma. So you are trying to release all the karma you have built up. So when you come back into a life, you make the plans and you will say, all right, let's do it again. We didn't do such a good job last time. Let's go back and do it again. This time you be the husband, I'll be the wife. We'll reverse the roles. Maybe it'll work out a little better that way and be able to get rid of some of this karma. Well, you also are making plans with who your parents are going to be, because sometimes there's karma there, what country you will be in, what kind of an environment, because all of this plays on what it is, environments, and what it is that you're trying to work out the next time you come around. So you're trying to plan everything out the best way you can, and you may choose a handicapped body. Of course, you know, I said I've taken people through the birth experience, and they're saying they have their nice little plan all figured out, all wrapped up like a little package, a Christmas package with ribbons on it, saying, this is what I am going to accomplish. They come into this life with their nice little plan. But this is a planet of free will. One of the few that I've found, a planet of free will, where we have the right to make up our own mind and make our own decisions and our own choices. We can change these too if we want to. We can make many decisions that affect many people. But when we come into this life, it is a planet of free will. We come in with our nice little plan all wrapped up like a Christmas present. Everybody else is coming in with their plans. And because it is a planet of free will, these plans all clash. And then life gets in the way. We get into the emotional. This is a planet where we learn emotions and limitations. They say it's a very challenging planet. You choose to come to Earth, you learn a lot of lessons that are very important, and you learn them more quickly because it is a challenging planet. So you come here to take on all of these responsibilities, to get rid of it, because you do want to advance on the other side. So many times, people want to have a handicapped body. And I usually say this at a lecture, why do you think there are more souls in line for a handicapped body than for a normal body? It's because you can work out more karma in a handicapped body than you can in a normal body. Because it is limitations, but you have put yourself into that position. If you know anyone that has a handicapped child or is dealing with a handicapped member in their family, think of the lessons that are being learned. not only the lessons being learned by the soul that puts itself into that body, but what about the lessons being learned by the caretakers? These can be positive or negative according to the way they handle the situations. But the soul in the handicapped body is teaching the caregivers a lot of different lessons that it would not have learned otherwise for their own advancement. Also, how do you react when you see a handicapped child or a handicapped person? Do you rebel? Or do you feel sympathy? Do you feel compassion? The way you react when you see someone in a handicapped body is your own karma. It's your own lesson. It's your own judgment. So these people, when they're volunteering to do this, are teaching everyone they come in contact with, even the people on the street, they're teaching everyone lessons. So by volunteering to do that, to take on that kind of a body and that kind of responsibility, they are not only repaying back a huge amount of karma, but they are teaching everyone around them lessons. So this be something to think about whenever you next see somebody in this kind of a situation, that it is for a reason. And there's more behind it than you think. I had a friend who had raised a child till he was 18. He was like a vegetable. He couldn't do anything. He could not communicate. He could just lay in the bed. I believe she said he could smile, but that was all he could do. She took care of this child for 18 years. In most of these cases, the husband usually leaves when there's so much responsibility like this. For some reason, the husband can't handle the situation. So the responsibility usually falls on the mother. Well, usually there is a bond. There is some kind of a karmic connection between the mother and the child. But also I'm thinking of the karma that is involved when the husband refuses to take responsibility. Is he going to have to repay that karma in another way? But she had to take constant care of this child. She didn't want anyone else to do it. She didn't want to put him in an institution. And she carried his picture around with her, and he was a very beautiful young man. And she kept saying, he is so intelligent. And the average person would say, what do you mean? He can't communicate. He can't talk. How do you even know what he's thinking? Apparently to her, there was something else there. And she said, he is so intelligent. But there was a great deal of love between her and this child till he was about 18 years old. And it finally got to the point where she couldn't take care of him anymore because she had to lift him and feed him. And at 18, he was getting so big that it was difficult for her. So she finally had to put him into an institution with a great deal of thought and agony on her part to finally give this child up. And she went to see him every day. But he only lived for a few months after that, in which case it's easy to see why there was something special between him and the mother that had to be worked out. Once that situation was not there anymore, and she was separated from the mother, then the karma was repaid, and there was no need for the child to continue in that body on this earth. And he died. And it was like a release then. To me, it was like it says in the Bible, well done, my good and faithful servant. She had completed her karma and her lesson, and now she was free to go on with the rest of her life unburdened. And he had completed with what he was supposed to do, teach her a lesson or whatever it was supposed to be. And he would go on to his next destiny, especially knowing on the other side that he had repaid a great deal of karma, a great deal of of payback in this life. And so that was very, very good. But this is only one of the cases. I'm sure a lot of you out there could think of things like this with handicapped souls. How do you react? How do the caregivers react? There's a great deal of responsibility here that to our own souls, because you know, if you don't pay back the karma, you have to come back and do it again with the same people. We have a tendency to come back with the same people again and again, either because we like to be with them or because there is karma to be repaid. And sometimes in my work, I found a pattern of these where they will go through many lifetimes trying to pay it back, and they can't. It just keeps repeating the same thing over and over, just the wheel of karma going round and around in a circle and never advancing up the ladder. So then I say, if it's not going to work out, you're impeding your growth and you're impeding the growth of the other person, then I would say, cut it loose, tear up the contract, and let it go. And many times you can't do this consciously because the other person will not understand. Sometimes they aren't even into this. They never understand. But you do sign a contract when you come into this life. You can mentally say this to the other person. It's not going to work. Let's tear up the contract. You go your way with love, and I will go mine, and we will let it go. It's just not going to work. And you'd be surprised how things will change once you have made that release and let it go. And that's what it's all about anyway. But I've had so many strange things happen in my work. This is part of what I do, is try to understand all this. I'm the reporter, the investigator, the accumulator of lost knowledge. So by finding all these cases, I'm able to put through patterns, and I get a much better understanding of the meaning of life and what's going on the other side. Now, I've had some cases that on the outside would seem rather strange. Nobody could understand why they would happen. Because, as I said last week, the subconscious is the part that I work with. The subconscious is the oversoul, the higher self, whatever part you want to call it, has all knowledge. And every ache, pain, physical symptom of the body is it subconscious trying to give you a message, trying to tell you something, trying to get your attention. Many times it has to result to drastic measures if it can't get your attention. And they've told me that no accident is an accident. It doesn't happen randomly. Everything that happens in your life happens for a reason. And I've had several that have come to me like this, and I want to give some examples. And on the surface, you would think it didn't have any logic to it at all. One man, as we were going over the questions he wanted to ask, said that a very important incident had happened to him a few years before. He was in a large city, and he was attacked by a gang of thugs and drug into this alley, and he was stabbed repeatedly. I think he said 7 or 8 times he was stabbed, and he was left for dead. He drug himself out to the street, and someone found him, and they took him to the hospital, so he didn't die. But it was a very horrible situation, and it took a long time recuperating from it. He wanted to know why did this happen? That was one of the main things for the session. And when we did the session and got to the subconscious, it said, oh, that was a bunch of his friends that had volunteered to help him. And I said, friends? Friends like that? Who needs enemies? They almost killed him. I said, what do you mean by friends? And they said, well, he was going the wrong direction. He was heading down the wrong road. He was supposed to be involved in helping people. And that's mostly the reason you come back here for anyway. I have never had the subconscious say that the reason you're on Earth is to party and drink and run around with beautiful women or, you know, sexy men and just spend your life having fun. It has never said that. It always says you're here to help people. You're here to help others on the road to the light, to help them get out of their wheel of karma. It's what it always says, that whatever you do is supposed to be helping other people and everyone around you, which it never deviates. Well, in this case, it said he was headed down the wrong way, and we tried many times. We tried to get his attention. We tried many times to steer him the way he was supposed to go, that he, you know, instinctively, subconsciously knew he had made his contract to come into this life to do. He was going off in the other direction. So they said they tried many times to get his attention, to steer him back to where he was supposed to be. And well, when it didn't work, the only solution was a drastic one, to have these, as he said, his friends, they volunteered on another level to almost kill him. And then he ended up in the hospital for a long time. He had a lot of time to think for introspection, till he realized what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. They had to stop his world, so to speak. Drastic, but I tell people, if you don't listen to what the subconscious is trying to tell you, it will hit you up the side of the head. Believe me, you don't want it to happen. You don't want it to do that. I had another man who was very wealthy, and he would go skiing, and he said he was really excellent. He was an expert at skiing. And one of the questions he had was, the one time he was going skiing, and he had a bad accident on the beginner's slope and broke his leg. He wondered, well, why in the world did that happen? He said, I'm too good. This should not have happened. The next day, his plans were to go and do what they called helicopter skiing, to where, I believe the way it is, they are dropped from a helicopter on the advanced slopes. This is kind of like the ultimate, I guess. Maybe some of you out there will understand it. The ultimate in skiing. He would be dropped from a helicopter. Well, instead, the day before he was going to do that, he has this accident on the beginner slope and breaks his leg. So he asked the subconscious, why did that happen? That's what he wanted to know. The subconscious said, better his leg than his life. Because it said if he had gone in the helicopter to do what he planned to do, he would have died. So they had to keep it from happening because his life was not to be ended that easily. I've been told that about myself. The subconscious says, if you're not supposed to go somewhere, and I travel constantly, if you're not supposed to go somewhere, we won't even let you go out the front door. If something will happen, and at the time you will think it was bad, but it was really just to keep you from going. So many of us in this life, if you're supposed to do something, no matter what it is, if you're really supposed to do it, everything will go smoothly. Just like swimming upstream, swimming downstream, just going with the flow, everything is easy, all the doors open, all of the plans are easy to make. That means you're supposed to go through with it. If there are obstacles put in the way, things to keep you from going, and you have this feeling of swimming upstream, then they're trying to tell you this is not in your best interest, you're not supposed to go. And if it would be something that would result in harm to you or your death, well, in that case, they would really get drastic. So, a little strange these things are, but this is what I've found. I had another client that came to me who only had one arm. And he had lost the arm when he was a teenager in high school. And so we wanted to find out why did that happen. He had adapted beautifully, he had a prosthesis, and he had adapted beautifully in his life and made a success of his life. But it was just like, if nothing ever happens randomly, why did that happen? And it happened in high school. In those days, they were allowing the science classes to experiment with rockets and things nowadays. You know, they always say, oh, that's too dangerous. Oh, they're so careful nowadays. They won't let any chance of anything happening. And I wonder if we protect our kids too much sometimes. But in those days, they were a lot easier going. In the science class, they were allowed to experiment with rockets. And it was when he was doing this, and somehow it backfired. He was holding it in his hand, and it exploded, and he lost his arm. Well, we wanted to know, why did that happen to a teenager? He was, I think, a senior in high school. The subconscious said, because he had been going into sports, he was excellent. He would have become a professional in sports. I don't remember now if it was football, basketball, or whatever it was, but he was so good. This was what his aim was, where his attention was. And when he was going into college, this was what he wanted to make his career, that he was going to go into sports. And he would have been a professional athlete, is what the subconscious said. But it said if he had done that, he would never have gotten into the spiritual work that he is in now. They said it might have happened, but it would have happened much later in his life, and he would have lost many opportunities along the way. So it was decided to do this to sidetrack him from the career in sports, take him down in a different direction to where he would finally end up working in the spiritual field. And he'd adapted beautifully. But these are things you sometimes look at them and say, well, pretty drastic. Why in the world did that have to happen? I have one more that a man came to me, and he was on crutches, and he was getting around real good, but he said he had been a millionaire, and he was highly, highly successful. He was building timeshares all over the world and making lots of money. At the time that the accident happened that almost killed him, he was in a private plane with just the pilot, and they were down in South America, landing on a small airstrip on the top of a mountain. It was in an area that he was considering building a timeshare in, and they were going in to look at it. And just a kind of a dangerous place to land, but it was on top of this mountain. And as they were coming in, he thought it was strange that his friend, the pilot, was just staring straight ahead with his hands clenched on the wheel. And as they come in, they were coming in too fast. And he said, well, surely he's going to pull up and go around. But it didn't happen. As he came in too fast, he went off the end of the runway, off the side of the mountain, crashing down the mountain, finally hitting into some trees. The pilot was killed, and this man was, they thought he was dead also. He was severely mangled into the wreckage. So when they got him to the hospital, the doctors have all told him, you're never going to be able to walk again. Well, he said he knew better than that, because they said he had had damage to his spine, to his neck, and there was no way he could walk again. But he said, no, I'm going to rebuild my life. Well, he did, but his career was over, and he just never went in that direction. He went in a different direction. But when I saw him, he was using crutches. It had been about 3 or 4 years. He could get around, but he had proved the doctors were wrong, and he was able to do it with his own willpower. But the subconscious, again, said this had to happen because he was making money and success his world. And by doing that, he was forgetting the important things along the way. His life had gone into the materialistic too much. Some of these cases make me wonder. I don't think there's anything wrong with being successful. I don't think there's anything wrong with making money. If this is the way your life is going to go, makes you happy. I think it's trying to tell us, don't let that become your world. Don't let it become your sole reason for living. It's just the accumulation of money and success. I think it means to think about other people, to think of how you can help people. Don't let it all become one-sided, lopsided. That's the way the pendulum goes that way. It can't balance out. There's nothing wrong with being happy and supplying money for yourself and your family, but I think it means there is more. There's some other things here that we have to focus on, that we have to get back to. What's really important is our families, our countries, you know, just to focus on the real things in our life instead of being bogged down in the materialistic. Because I've had other businessmen come to me that were on the verge of having heart attacks because that's all they thought about was work, work, work. How can I make more money? And subconscious told them they needed to sit back, delegate the power and the responsibilities to other people, take time for themselves, because they were putting too much pressure on themselves. And sometimes I've said, you mean like stop and smell the roses? And they said, he needs a whole garden. They just get too involved in the materialistic. But I said, if you don't pay attention to what the subconscious is trying to tell you, it will hit you up the side of the head to get your attention. We don't want it to go that far. We don't want it to have to be that bad anyway. But these are just some of the cases that I've had. I've got so much material. Sometimes when I start these shows, I'll say, what am I going to find to talk about? Will I run out of things to talk about? I don't think so, because I have barely scratched the surface on the things that I really want to share with you over the next weeks. Going to be a lot of things we could get into. But my books, it's just like writing puzzles. I can see pieces here and there. I find a piece here. I find a piece over there. And I put it all together, and it begins to make sense. Doesn't all come from one person. Strange thing has been happening as I work with this material all over the world. I'm saying this because I don't think there's enough time to get into some more stories. But all over the world when I do this, that's why I know it has to be real. I'm in communication with something up there that I call the subconscious, higher self, oversoul, whatever you want to call it. I know it's real because everyone I work with, it comes through all of them in the same way of speaking, the same voice, the same way of using the words. And as I write my books, I could be doing a client in England. And it always occurs at the end of the session, after we have done the therapy to find out what we can do to help them and try to answer all of their questions. At the end of the session, when I'm winding down and I'm asking the subconscious, do you have anything, any message or advice you want to give the person, you know, Susan or whoever, before we leave? And at that point, usually the voice will change, and sometimes it'll say, Dolores, this is the next piece of information you need for your next book. And it will come out with a theory or an idea or something that I have not heard before, and it explains it as best it can. I often wonder, what does the person think when they get home and listen to that tape? Sometimes they'll call me or email me and they'll say, who was that at the end? It wasn't me. And these people, none of them know what I'm working on. They don't know what I'm involved with, but yet they will give me this information. They never take away from the person's session, but they will do it at the end. Then, the next week, I may be back in the States and I have another client. It happens again, and at the end of the session, they will continue with making it clearer or explaining more about the new theory that they want me to write about or want me to think about. And it continues like this. I get a piece of information from one person, then I get a piece of information from somebody else. And it's like putting it together like a puzzle. Some of you may have difficulty understanding this or believing it, but it does happen. And when it happens over and over again through, like I said, I've done thousands of clients. If it begins to happen through hundreds over a certain length of time, there has to be something to it. Because these people don't know anything that I'm doing. They don't know the work I'm involved with. They don't know what other people have told me, because I never discuss any of the cases with any of the other clients. We're only working on theirs. So something else that's bigger has to be guiding this and making sure that I get the information that I am to spread to the world. So it's strange and hard to believe, but it does happen that way. So in the future talks that I'll be doing, when I talk about they and them, you'll understand I'm talking about whoever it is that is guiding this and making sure that I help the people and get the information. And believe me, it's a lot of information that's coming. The 13 books, the last two have been the Convoluted Universe series. It's getting into more complicated information that they think it's time for us to know. And I've already accumulated enough information to write book 3 of the Convoluted Universe series. So they think it's time for us to open up to these complicated metaphysical ideas. And that's what I'll be working with in the times to come. During the winter, when I'm home and not traveling, that's when I'd be doing a lot of my writing and transcribing the tapes and putting the material together. So there will be more books coming from me. But also, our company is constantly publishing books that are thought-invoking, and those authors will be speaking on this show also. Well, anyway, the next week, the next show after this, I will be back in the United States, and we will be doing it with the live call-in. All right. If anyone wants to call or wants to find out more about the books and my schedule or anything about what's happening here, the number to call is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. If you want to check on my website, the name of my company is Ozark Mountain Publishing. We abbreviate that on the website. The website is www.ozarkmt.com. The abbreviation for mountain, ozarkmt.com. Now, let everybody go, and I'll see you next week on the next show. I'll be back in the States, and I'll tell you about everything that has happened. So goodbye till next time.